Welcome back to Bedtime Stories with Celosia Crane and our Christmas Fairy Tale series. Today, you're getting another three fairy tales. The Christmas Fairy of Strausberg, The Wooden Shoes of Little Wolf, and The Little Girl and the Winter Whirlwinds. The Christmas Fairy of Strausberg, a German fairy tale, by Francis Jenkin Olcott. Once, long ago, there lived near the ancient city of Strasbourg, on the river Rhine, a young and handsome count whose name was Otto. As the years flew by, he remained unwed, and never so much as cast a glance at the fair maidens of the country round. For this reason, people began to call him Stoneheart. It chanced that Count Otto, one Christmas Eve, ordered that a great hunt should take place in the forest surrounding his castle. He and his guests and his many retainers rode forth, and the chase became more and more exciting. It led through thickets and over pathless tracts of forest, until at great length Count Otto found himself separated from his companions. He rode on by himself until he came to a spring of clear, bubbling water, known to the people around as the Fairy Well. Here Count Otto dismounted. He bent over the spring and began to lave his hands in the sparkling tide. But to his wonder, he found that though the weather was cold and frosty, the water was warm and delightfully caressing. He felt a glow of joy pass through his veins, and as he plunged his hands deeper, he fancied that his right hand was grasped by another, soft and small, which gently slipped from his finger the gold ring he always wore. And lo, when he drew out his hand, the gold ring was gone. Full of wonder at this mysterious event, the count mounted his horse and returned to his castle, resolving in his mind that the very next day he would have the fairy well emptied by his servants. He retired to his room, and throwing himself just as he was upon his couch, tried to sleep. But the strangeness of the adventure kept him restless and wakeful. Suddenly he heard the hoarse baying of the watch-hounds in the courtyard, and then the creaking of the drawbridge as though it were being lowered. Then came to his ear the patter of many small feet on the stone staircase, and next he heard indistinctly the sound of light footsteps in the chamber adjoining his own. Count Otto sprang from his couch, and as he did so there sounded a strain of delicious music, and the door of his chamber was flung open. Hurrying into the next room, he found himself in the midst of numberless fairy beings clad in gay and sparkling robes. They paid no heed to him, but began to dance and laugh and sing to the sound of mysterious music. In the center of the apartment stood a splendid Christmas tree, the first ever seen in that country. Instead of toys and candles, there hung on its lighted boughs diamond stars, pearl necklaces, bracelets of gold ornamented with colored jewels, aggregates of rubies and sapphires, silken belts embroidered with oriental pearls, and daggers mounted in gold and studded with the rarest gems. The whole tree swayed, sparkled, and glittered in the radiance of its many lights. Count Otto stood speechless, gazing at all this wonder, when suddenly the fairy stopped dancing and fell back, to make room for a lady of dazzling beauty who came slowly toward him. She wore on her raven-black tresses a golden diadem set with jewels. Her hair flowed down upon a robe of rosy satin and creamy velvet. She stretched out two small white hands to the count and addressed him in sweet, alluring tones. "Dear Count Otto," she said, "I come to return your Christmas visit. I am Ernestine, the Queen of the Fairies. I bring you something you lost in the Fairy Well." And as she spoke, she drew from her bosom a golden casket set with diamonds and placed it in his hands. He opened it eagerly and found within his lost gold ring. Carried away by the wonder of it all, and overcome by an irresistible impulse, the Count pressed the fairy Ernestine to his heart, while she, holding him by the hand, drew him into the magic maze of the dance. The mysterious music floated through the room, and the rest of that fairy company circled and whirled around the fairy queen and Count Otto, and then gradually dissolved into a mist of many colors, leaving the Count and his beautiful guest alone. Then the young man, forgetting all his former coldness toward the maidens of the countryside about, fell on his knees before the fairy and besought her to become his bride. At last she consented, on the condition that he should never speak the word death in her presence. The next day the wedding of Count Otto and Ernestine, Queen of the Fairies, was celebrated with great pomp and magnificence, and the two continued to live happily for many years. Now it happened on a time that the Count and his fairy wife were to hunt in the forest around the castle. The horses were saddled and bridled, and standing at the door the company waited, and the Count paced the hall in great impatience. But still the fairy Ernestine tarried long in her chamber. At length she appeared at the door of the hall, and the Count addressed her in anger. "You have kept us waiting so long," he cried, "that you would make a good messenger to send for death." Scarcely had he spoken the forbidden and fatal word, when the fairy, uttering a wild cry, vanished from his sight. In vain Count Otto, overwhelmed with grief and remorse, searched the castle and the fairy well. No trace could he find of his beautiful lost wife, but the imprint of her delicate hand set in the stone arch above the castle gate. Years passed by, and the fairy Ernestine did not return. The Count continued to grieve. Every Christmas Eve, he set up a lighted tree in the room where he had first met the fairy, hoping in vain that she would return to him. Time passed and the Count died. The castle fell into ruins, but to this day may be seen above the massive gate, deeply sunken into the stone arch, the impress of a small and delicate hand. And such, say the good folk of Strasbourg, was the origin of the Christmas tree. The Wooden Shoes of Little Wolf, a French tale, by François Coppée. Once upon a time, so long ago that the world has forgotten the date, in a city of the north of Europe, the name of which is so hard to pronounce that no one remembers it, there was a little boy just 7 years old whose name was Wolf. He was an orphan and lived with his aunt, a hard-hearted, avaricious old woman who never kissed him but once a year on New Year's Day, and who sighed with regret every time she gave him a bowl full of soup. The poor little boy was so sweet-tempered that he loved the old woman in spite of her bad treatment, but he could not look without trembling at the wart, decorated with 4 gray hairs, which grew on the end of her nose. As Wolf's aunt was known to have a house of her own and a wooden stocking full of gold, she did not dare to send her nephew to the school for the poor, but she wrangled so that the schoolmaster of the rich boy's school was forced to lower his price and admit little Wolf among his pupils. The bad schoolmaster was vexed to have a boy so meanly clad and who paid so little, and he punished little Wolf severely without cause, ridiculed him, and even incited against him his comrades, who were the sons of rich citizens. They made the orphan their drudge and mocked at him so much that the little boy was as miserable as the stones in the street, and hid himself away in corners to cry when the Christmas season came. On the eve of the great day, the schoolmaster was to take all his pupils to the midnight mass, and then to conduct them home again to their parents' houses. Now, as the winter was very severe, and a quantity of snow had fallen within the past few days, the boys came to the place of meeting warmly wrapped up, with fur-lined caps drawn down over their ears, padded jackets, gloves, and knitted mittens, and good strong shoes with thick soles. only Little Wolf presented himself shivering in his thin everyday clothes and wearing on his feet socks and wooden shoes. His naughty comrades tried to annoy him in every possible way, but the poor orphan was so busy warming his hands by blowing on them and was suffering so much from chilblains that he paid no heed to the taunts of the others. Then the band of boys, marching two by two, started for the parish church. It was comfortable inside the church, which was brilliant with lighted tapers, and the pupils, made lively by the gentle warmth, the sound of the organ, and the singing of the choir, began to chatter in low tones. They boasted of the midnight treats awaiting them at home. The son of the mayor had seen, before leaving the house, a monstrous goose larded with truffles so that it looked like a black spotted leopard. Another boy told of the fir tree waiting for him, on the branches of which hung oranges, sugar plums, and punchinellos. Then they talked about what the Christ child would bring them, or what he would leave in their shoes, which they would certainly be careful to place before the fire when they went to bed. And the eyes of the little rogues, lively as a crowd of mice, sparkled with delight as they thought of the many gifts they would find on waking. The pink bags of burnt almonds, the bonbons, lead soldiers standing in rows, menageries, and magnificent jumping jacks dressed in purple and gold. Little Wolf, alas, knew well that his miserly aunt would send him to bed without any supper. But as he had been good and industrious all the year, he trusted that the Christ child would not forget him, so he meant that night to set his wooden shoes on the hearth. The midnight mass was ended. The worshippers hurried away, anxious to enjoy the treats awaiting them in their homes. The bands of pupils, two by two following the schoolmaster, passed out of the church. Now, under the porch, seated on a stone bench, in the shadow of an arched niche, was a child asleep. A little child dressed in a white garment and with bare feet exposed to the cold. He was not a beggar, for his dress was clean and new, and beside him upon the ground, tied in a cloth, were the tools of a carpenter's apprentice. Under the light of the stars, his face, with its closed eyes, shone with an expression of divine sweetness, and his soft, curling blonde hair seemed to form an aureole of light about his forehead. But his tender feet, blue with the cold on this cruel night of December, were pitiful to see. The pupils, so warmly clad and shod, passed with indifference before the unknown child. Some, the sons of the greatest men in the city, cast looks of scorn on the barefooted one. But Little Wolf, coming last out of the church, stopped, deeply moved, before the beautiful sleeping child. "Alas," said the orphan to himself, "how dreadful! This poor little one goes without stockings in weather so cold, and what is worse, he has no shoe to leave beside him while he sleeps, so that the Christ child may place something in it to comfort him in all his misery." And carried away by his tender heart, Little Wolf drew off the wooden shoe from his right foot and placed it before the sleeping child. And as best as he was able, now hopping, now limping, and wetting his sock in the snow, he returned to his aunt.
"You good for nothing," cried the old woman, full of rage when she saw that one of his shoes was gone. "What have you done with your shoe, little beggar?"
Little Wolf did not know how to lie, and though shivering with terrors as he saw the gray hairs on the end of her nose stand upright, he tried stammering to tell his adventure. But the old miser burst into frightful laughter.
"Ah, the sweet young master takes off his shoe for a beggar. Ah, master spoils a pair of shoes for a barefoot. This is something new indeed. Ah, well, since things are so, I will place the shoe that is left in the fireplace, and tonight the Christ child will put a rod to whip you when you wake, and tomorrow you shall have nothing to eat but water and dry bread, and we shall see if the next time you give away your shoe to the first vagabond that comes along."
And saying this, the wicked woman gave him a box on each ear and made him climb into his wretched room in the loft. There, the heartbroken little one lay down in the darkness, and drenching his pillow with tears, fell asleep. But in the morning, when the old woman, awakened by the cold and shaken by her cough, descended to the kitchen, a wonder of wonders, she saw the great fireplace filled with bright toys, magnificent boxes of sugar plums, riches of all sorts, and in front of all of this treasure, the wooden shoe which her nephew had given to the vagabond. Standing beside the other shoe which she herself had placed there the night before, intending to put in it a handful of switches. And as Little Wolf, who had come running at the cries of his aunt, stood in speechless delight before all the splendid Christmas gifts, there came great shouts of laughter from the street. The old woman and the little boy went out to learn what it was all about, and saw the gossips gathered around the public fountain. What could have happened? Oh, a most amusing and extraordinary thing. The children of all the rich men of the city, whose parents wished to surprise them with the most beautiful gifts, had found nothing but switches in their shoes. Then the old woman and Little Wolf remembered with alarm all the riches that were in their own fireplace. But just then they saw the pastor of the parish church arriving with his face full of perplexity. Above the bench, near the church door, in the very spot where the night before a child, dressed in white with bare feet exposed to the great cold, had rested his sleeping head, the pastor had seen a golden circle wrought into the old stones. Then all the people knew that the beautiful sleeping child, beside whom had lain the carpenter's tool, was the Christ child himself, and that he had rewarded the faith and charity of Little Wolf. The Little Girl and the Winter Whirlwinds, a Bulgarian folktale. One year, the wicked Winter Witch decided to stop spring from coming on time and make winter the only season on earth. She hid the sun behind dark clouds and covered the earth with heavy snow. So one morning, the people from a small mountain village woke up and found their houses buried under the snow up to the roofs. They started digging tunnels for their own to neighboring houses, and gathered in small groups to decide what they could do. They finally decided that the best thing to do is to send someone to the highest mountain peak, where the good wizard Father Frost lived in his palace of ice, and ask him for help. But no one was willing to go on such a dangerous trip.
"I am ready to go," said an old man, "but I am afraid I am too old and slow to reach the peak on time. If only I was 20 years younger."
"Don't worry, Grandfather, I will go," his little granddaughter said. She was an orphan living in his home since her parents died. "No, not you," the neighbors pitied her. "You are too young and tender for such a hard job. You don't even have a warm coat, no hat and scarf, not even woolen mittens." "I am not afraid," the little girl said. "My feet are strong and I'm as fast as a mountain goat."
"But you'll freeze up there with no shelter to hide from frost."
"I will not," the little girl said firmly. "I have a warm heart full of love for everyone. It will save me from the frost."
"Go, my child," the old man said. "I know your good heart, and I trust it."
The children, who were all her friends, gave her their warmest clothes. "Here, take my coat," one of them said. "My mittens are so warm. Put them on," said another. "Take my hat, my scarf, my woolen socks, and my boots." Soon the little girl was ready to go. She waved back at her friends and started for the snowy mountain peak. She went further and higher, never thinking about rest. Soon she was able to see the glittering ice on top of the highest peak. All of a sudden, the whirlwinds woke from their sleep and, noticing the little figure in the snow, became furious.
"Who dares trespass our property? Let's show her who we are," they screamed. "Let's blow her so hard until she forgets where she's heading for."
And they started whirling fiercely around the girl. But she only huddled into her warm coat and bravely went on. The whirlwinds got very tired, one after the other, fell on the ground gasping for breath.
"What a strong girl," one of them said. We are exhausted, and she's not even tired. No human being has ever outmastered us, let alone such a fragile little girl. If we cannot manage ourselves, let's call our sisters the Blizzards for help.
So they called for the Blizzards. Hearing them, the Blizzards became very angry.
She will pay for that,
they roared, and threw themselves after her. It was a long and uneven struggle, but the girl overcame the Blizzards too, thanks to her strong, warm heart that never let her feel fear or weariness. The Blizzards fell on the ground, breathing heavily.
That's a shame, one of them hissed. We are not able to stop her. Let's call our mother for help.
Mother, mother, they all screamed. Come to help.
Their mother was the Frosty Winter Witch. She came at once and said,
I saw everything. Now listen to me. When you cannot defeat someone by force, turn things the other way around. Let's be good to her.
What do you mean? To kiss her? A whirlwind asked ironically.
Nothing of the sort, the Frosty Winter said. Let's just try to be polite and kind so she will never suspect us of any evil thoughts.
So the winds stopped and the Blizzards went away. The Frosty Winter Witch appeared before the little girl, like a beautiful young woman in a sparkling white gown, with long white hair and a crown of icy diamonds.
Am I dreaming, or is this some good miracle? The girl thought. This beautiful lady has the face of my dear mother, and I can hear her sweet voice singing my lullaby.
Oh, how I want to hear some more. I will sit here for a while, she said to herself. I'm so near to the palace, no more than an hour walking left. I'll be on time. The little girl sat down and closed her eyes. The Frosty Winter Witch grinned in delight. Sleep, little girl, and may you sleep forever. Then she left the sleeping girl on the snowy hill and flew away to tell her children how she managed to deceive the girl. The little girl was sleeping, smiling happily, but the color of her face was changing as time passed. Her pink cheeks became at first red, then blue, then waxy yellow. She was slowly freezing. Until all of a sudden something stirred the snow. A squeaking sound was heard, and a tiny head showed up from a hole in the snow. It was a little white mouse, her shiny black eyes fixed on the sitting figure.
Someone's in trouble, squeaked the mouse.
And right after that, a number of little holes opened in the snow, and a number of mice peeped out of the holes. They ran to the girl and started massaging her feet and hands. But the mice were so little and their labor so inefficient that they decided to call their friends the rabbits for help. This time, bigger holes opened in the snow, and a number of white rabbits peeped out and ran to the rescue. From the snow-covered pine trees, a number of squirrels jumped down, and soon the girl was covered with white and brown fur all over. The little animals warmed her up with their own furry bodies. They were extremely happy to see her cheeks become pink again. Soon the girl opened her eyes. She thanked her new friends for saving her life and told them why she was here and where she was going.
"We are coming with you," the animals cheered. "We also suffer very much from this never-ending winter."
Flocking around the girl, the animals accompanied her to the ice palace. There, they all knocked at the gate, but no one answered.
"What might have happened to Father Frost?" the animals wondered.
"Let's try to open the door. It's not locked."
They opened the heavy gate, and the girl stepped in, followed by her friends. A glittering icy corridor led them to a big crystal hall, and there, on a gorgeous throne of carved ice, Father Christmas was fast asleep, sitting on his icy throne, dressed in silver-embroidered clothes. Two squirrels jumped in his lap and tickled his face with their furry tails. A mighty sneezing sound made them all freeze with fear. But Father Christmas opened his blue eyes and smiled.
"What are you doing here, little friends?"
The girl told him everything. You mean I have slept here while the wicked Winter Witch was trying to stop spring from coming? Throughout the whole winter? Father Christmas asked, astonished. I guess she decided to outsmart me and stay on Earth forever, but I will not let her. Thank you, little ones, for waking me up. Now I'll restore the natural order and give everyone what he deserves. Then he blew on his silver whistle, and in an instant all his subjects appeared in the big crystal hall. He ordered them to go and find the Frost Winter Witch and bring her to the palace so he could lock her down in the cellar until next year. He also told them to clear the skies from clouds so that the sun can melt the snow. When the big gates opened again, the sun outside was shining and the soft snow had started to melt. The way back was much easier. The new friends parted, promising to help any time when needed. Everyone in the village cheered, meeting the brave little girl. They were very happy to pick the first snowdrops and give them to her. Spring was also very happy to hear the songs and see the dances the children had prepared specially for her. That is the end of this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed these three tales, and we'll come back next week for yet another tale. Bedtime Stories with Celosia Crane is produced solely through the support of my patrons on Patreon. To become a patron for as little as $1 a month, please visit www.patreon.com/Celosia Crane.
If you enjoy this podcast and would like to connect with me further, you can find me on Instagram at Celosia Crane _author. Link is in the show notes.